90 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay, and always streaming on the Civic Media app. Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. The Wisconsin State Senate takes up several proposed constitutional amendments today. They include barring government officials from closing houses of worship during emergencies and requiring a photo ID to vote. Passing amendments instead of bills is a way for Republicans to get around Governor Evers and the new Supreme Court liberal majority. Amendments still have to pass two sessions of the legislature and go to a statewide referendum. Plans for the National Football League draft in Green Bay are coming together. The league says it will happen on April 24th through the 26th in 2025. Fox Valley leaders are counting on as many as 250,000 football fans to come to Northeast Wisconsin for the draft. Organizers are still working out the details, but most of the events will happen in and around Lambeau Field. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Here's what you need to know closer to home.
For the talk of Green Bay, WGBW News, I'm Pete Schwabe. New jobs arrive in Manitowoc just before the holidays thanks to a new FedEx distribution center. NBC 26 reports that 80 people could be hired by FedEx. The facility is located on the southeast side and it's over 200,000 square feet. Manitowoc Mayor Justin Nichols says it's a perfect fit because his city builds things and ships things. Manitowoc police have released a description of an alleged armed robber who shot another person. The shooting took place in an apartment in the 2700 block of Vibon Street at noon on Saturday, November 4th. The shooting victim was taken to the hospital and treated. The suspect was gone by the time police arrived. Authorities say the suspect is African American, between 5 feet 9 and 6 feet tall, with a slim build. He was last seen wearing dark clothes. There is a reward of up to $100,000. Anyone with helpful information should call the Manitowoc Police Department. And that's what you need to know. I'm Pete Schwabe, WGBW 97.9 News.
If you love them enough to listen to them practice the same song on tuba,
please be done.
Over and over and over and over and over. Then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're correctly buckled in the back seat.
Sounds good, honey.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
The Brewers owner not happy with Craig Counsell. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Craig Counsell deciding to accept an offer to become the manager of the Chicago Cubs, paying Counsell $8 million a year, making him the highest paid manager in baseball history. Now, Brewers owner Mark Antanasio let reporters know he was disappointed, saying, quote, Craig has lost us and our community. The next time Craig Counsell will be in AmFam Field is next May when the Cubs come to town to play the Brewers. NBA, the Bucks picked up a win in Brooklyn, beating the Nets 129-125. Giannis Antetokounmpo leading Milwaukee with 36 points and 12 rebounds. Men's college basketball, the Badgers beating Arkansas State 105-76 at the Kohl Center. Badgers head coach Greg Gard.
I think defensively we got better at the start of the second half. It's not helpful when you got your more experienced guys on the bench in foul trouble, but I thought our guys off the bench gave us a great boost. We've thought that depth would help us, and here we are in game one, and it already showed.
That's Badgers head coach Greg Gard. With sports, I'm Mike Clement.
Your hometown radio refreshed. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Here's your updated forecast.
Cloudy skies expected this afternoon with a chance for scattered showers. High at 42. Northeasterly winds 8 to 15 miles an hour. Overcast tonight. Scattered rain showers likely. 38. Scattered rain showers again tomorrow. High at 44. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Ray Miller. Right now, it's 39.
Mino and the Mayor.
Very honored to have Chester Markle joining us.
You had some challenges with alcohol. You have done a great job getting that message out.
You know, it takes a long time to get it for some people. You know, my responsibility to every community and every place I go is to give back what others gave to me when I didn't know how to get it.
Weekday mornings from 6 until 8 on the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, and Oshkosh Air Support, WISS. Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app. Where the fans own the team. This is the Talk of Green Bay, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW. From the Civic Media Radio Network, moving Wisconsin forward one joke at a time. This is As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Broad.
And so it goes, and so it goes, and so it goes, and so it goes. But where it's going, no one knows. Hello, Wisconsin!
Now, filling in for the new mom, here's Jane Matinere.
Good morning and welcome to As Goes Wisconsin on this Tuesday, November 7th. Greg Buck is with me in studio. Calvin is on the board, and I am delighted that we are being joined by our friend and colleague and a person of so many accomplishments. I could spend 20 minutes just going through the list of everything she's done. But Maggie Dawn is here as well. All kinds of things coming up on the show today at 10:33. Dan Schaefer will be here. We will recombobulate. Coming up at 11:06, Dr. Stephen Cole from Marquette University is going to join us, and we're going to talk about the GDP. It's very sexy.
I can't wait.
I'm very excited. And when I emailed him, I told him I need him to explain the GDP to me like I'm in fifth grade. So we'll see how that goes. We're going to start off, though, with something that's really important that's happening in the Supreme Court today. Supreme Court is hearing a case on whether or not people who are under a domestic violence restraining order should be allowed to have guns. So, Maggie Dawn, this seems bad. Oh, and now she's frozen. Oh, there you are. Now we can't hear you. We cannot hear you.
Can't hear you, Maggie.
All right. Let's see what's going on with the live stream. Otherwise, Maggie, just give us a call at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789, because we are unable to hear you right now. So here's what's going on. Zaki Rahimi had been subject to a domestic violence restraining order in 2019, after threatening to shoot his girlfriend after assaulting her, after a Texas court entered a domestic violence restraining order against him, he was a suspect in multiple shootings, and police then found firearms in his apartment. He pleaded guilty to violating the ban on firearms for those who are subject to a domestic violence restraining order and was sentenced to prison. And now the Supreme Court is taking this up today. And I just have a really bad feeling about this. Maggie, are you with us now?
I am, Jane. Sorry about that. Love to start off a morning with a little bit of audio difficulty.
This is a big case, and it's going to have massive implications, right?
It's, I don't want to overstate, but this is really all of the marbles, and it's because, for all of the marbles, and it's because of the case that the Rahimi case is asking the Supreme Court to interpret. And that is a 2022 case, obviously decided by this newly constituted, highly right-leaning Supreme Court called the Bruin case. And the Bruin case set out a standard that any firearm regulation in the country must now meet or be found unconstitutional. And what's really worrisome about this is that Bruin standard is also the exact same test, slightly different wording, but that you now see in the abortion decision, Dobbs, the year before. And it's establishing effectively what is a historical precedent test for regulations or the acknowledgement of rights, as was the case in the Dobbs decision. And what that historical precedent test says is you have to point to some kind of 18th century analogy to this regulation in when we're talking about firearm regulation, or this right when you're talking about privacy and healthcare access rights. And of course, by doing so, you're trying to take modern questions and answer them under the cultural understandings of the 18th century. Now, I know Speaker Mike Johnson might like that. but boy, if you're a woman, a black person, person of color, LGBTQIA+, a Muslim, a Jew, or anybody else that wasn't a land-owning white man in the 18th century, that may sound problematic to you. And it ends up in absurd results like this could be. What reasonable person, right, no matter what your politics, would say the government shouldn't be able to prevent domestic abusers from possessing firearms?
Because they weren't allowed to do that in the 1700s. It's absurd, Maggie.
Totally absurd.
They want to refer back to a period of time where women were considered property.
Exactly. And the statistics here are really frightening, right? Because the reason that I make reference to the Dobbs decision isn't in isolation. It's the same bogus, well, we have to find a historical precedent for it. Well, of course, there wasn't a right to abortion in the 18th century because women and black folks were still chattel, right? But here's what we know from the data. When a woman becomes pregnant, the odds of her suffering from domestic abuse go up extraordinarily. 20% of pregnant women experience intimate partner violence.
20%.
Yes, ma'am. And if you are an adolescent or the pregnancy was unintended, the odds are even higher, which means when you combine this dual threat of we can't regulate guns and you don't have a right to choose your own health care, that spells violent death for women. And while that may be the tip of the spear, all of us end up suffering, which is that piece, you know, those articles that John Dietrich so eloquently put forward in the Journal Sentinel about the explosion of firearm suicides in the state of Wisconsin.
Yes. If you're just joining us, Maggie Dawn is our guest. You can catch Maggie every Monday through Thursday across the Civic Media Network from 6 to 7 p.m. We are talking about what's happening today in the Supreme Court in a case that is being considered on whether or not people who are under a domestic violence restraining order should be allowed to get guns. I saw this, Maggie, in the American Journal of Public Health. An abused woman is 5 times more likely to be killed by a male partner when there is a firearm in the house. I mean, the numbers just don't lie. And I have a really bad feeling that once again, our Supreme Court is going to act to protect the guns and not the lives.
Yeah, this is, again, to me, where all of this springs from is this ridiculous standard that the Supreme Court has adopted, which is this retrograde 18th century must find an analogous right or regulation from then in order for our modern society, more diverse than it's ever been, more secular than it's ever been, to somehow fit what our needs now from a legal perspective into what society, culture, and our democracy's needs were then. That doesn't pass even the smell test, and the results are terrible. This is an example, but let's just step back from the legal technicalities for a minute. If we take the idea that, well, it has to be this 18th century historical understanding or historical analogy, you end up with what I'm going to call triple-layered bias. Here's the triple layers. Well, first of all, who got to write down the history and make the laws back then?
Oh, wait, don't tell me. So I assume it was landowning white men.
Yes, yes, yes. Okay, so there's bias one, which is who's writing down the history. Of course, there was the underlying second level of bias, which is women, people of color, anybody who wasn't a landowning white man, didn't get to vote at all back then. So there's that layer of bias, right? So it's who's writing the history down, generally the political winners, how history gets recorded. That's all about that. Who's voting? It wasn't us and black folks back then. And then the third layer of bias that enters is that judges are then purporting to be academic historians and purport to have the good sensibility to parse which historical facts are analogous or not analogous. And what's really scary in this Rahimi case is that the appeals court, which was the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, an all-white appeals court, one of the most Trumpiest of all appeals court, I'm going to be talking about this tomorrow on my show at 6 p.m., that appeals court basically discounted all of the historical analogies that the government presented to defend this law. And that is that third layer of bias, which is the bias of individual judges to decide which history matters now. When you layer those three layers of bias together, the cumulative effect is not one that protects and honors the humanity of historically disadvantaged groups of people, because of course not, because judges to this day remain more white, more male, and older and richer than the rest of us. So this is a really broken way for us to evaluate federal regulations, as well as the rights that the federal government will acknowledge for different groups of people. There has to be a better way, regardless of our party.
Yeah, this does not bode well. And I go back to thinking about when they overturned Dobbs, when the Supreme Court overturned Dobbs, and Alito's opinion basically referred back to, what was it, a 14th century Englishman who believed in witches? That's what he used for his arguments to overturn Dobbs.
They're not critical academicians of history, right? Like, that's not what a judge's expertise is. And so now you have them, and judges, we all suffer from various cognitive biases. And when judges are now deciding which history matters, with whatever lens they're bringing to their analysis or their sort of leanings prior to a case, these are human beings. They're judges. They have values and beliefs, and those impact which histories they're more likely to credit, all else being equal. And we see that. What an absurdism to have a Supreme Court judge, when deciding the privacy rights of women, to refer as authority to a man who believed in witches.
We will continue this conversation when we come back. If you want to check in, call and or text 844-967-2789. Please join us and stick around. You're listening to As Goes Wisconsin. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Talk of Green Bay, WGBW.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here. I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
Planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe, and is the best way to protect that legacy.
Protect your legacy. Visit ready.gov/plan for the tools and tips you need to start your emergency preparedness plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Opt US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the lingo.
Jelly. Jelly adjective. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous. As in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org, brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
The Talk of Green Bay, WGBW.
Here come the judge. Here come the judge!
Good morning. Welcome to As Goes Wisconsin. Jane Mettner in for Kristen Bry. Greg Bach with me in studio. Calvin is on the board, and our colleague and friend Maggie Dawn from the Maggie Dawn Show is joining us on the phone. We're going to get back to Maggie in just a second. Dave from Waukesha has been holding on the line. Good morning, Dave. What did you want to say about this Supreme Court case that they're considering today?
I can't even believe we're having this conversation. It's simply a no-brainer. Somebody who has a history of violence should not have a lethal weapon in their hand, and they must have a history of violence or they wouldn't have the restraining order. That's right. Number one. And number two, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that our founding fathers gave us the right to bear arms because there were no grocery stores. We had to shoot animals to live, and we had no national defense, no army. That's why they gave us the right to bear arms. And any person that's honest with himself will admit that. And that's what I got to say about that.
Appreciate that, Dave. Thank you so much. 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. Greg had a question for Maggie.
Hey, Maggie. I had a question. I was wondering if, you know, when we see cases like this come about, are we seeing any outside forces, be it like the NRA, saying we need to protect rights of ownership for all, or are they holding back maybe on this one particularly?
I haven't reviewed the NRA's amicus brief in this case. I did read a Wall Street Journal op-ed on this yesterday. And listen, Mr. Rahimi is about the most unattractive possible person for the NRA to defend their right to have a weapon, right? The guy, after the restraining order, there was additional acts of violence after he was criminally charged under this particular statute, went out and shot his gun in five more incidents. I mean, the guy was a menace. Nobody disputes that. So the tack that you see taken in the Wall Street Journal and other similar leaning publications or more conservative leaning viewpoints is, listen, this isn't like, of course, this guy shouldn't have a gun. But you can't take away the gun or prevent him from having a gun based on a civil restraining order. So it's a due process argument. They're saying there's not enough process and protection there.
So basically they'll find any reason to say, do not take the gun away.
Yeah. In other words, because there isn't a criminal process with the standards, the high burdens of proof, in order to issue a restraining order, we have to preference the right of the gun owner, which to me, again, let's talk about what's actually happening here. The legal standards are interesting, and of course that's the argument that they have to make to defend the right of someone like Mr. Rahimi to continue to possess basically an arsenal of firearms. But understand what's actually happening in that moment and what is really operating under that argument. And that is the right of the gun owner trumps and surpasses the woman's right and by extension society's right to exist in safety.
Yes.
Yep.
So right when we start to put these things together, what we always have at the root of these really difficult arguments are two values, two good things, arguably, coming together, which is, yes, our Constitution does protect the right to bear arms. We also have an inalienable right to life and the pursuit of happiness. This is enshrined as well. So how do we balance when those two rights, those two values are in conflict? And the preferencing almost without question, the right to bear arms by this Supreme Court and conservative-leaning appeals courts, to me, doesn't pass the societal smell test today.
I completely agree with you, Maggie, but I feel very, very confident that the court is going to side with the gun because that just seems to be where this is all heading. And I want to remind everybody as well, even if you're not a woman or a person of color or a marginalized group, this affects all of us. The executive director of Moms Demand Action, Angela Farrell-Zabala, notes that many masked gunmen end up killing their current or former intimate partner as part of their killing spree. A lot of these guys who have committed these crimes have histories of domestic violence.
Yeah, it's a harbinger. It is itself a red flag, if you will. And we now know, as we're looking and people are dissecting what the mass shooting that occurred in Maine 2 weeks ago, we're getting to a place where we understand that, like, red flag laws, even when you have them, don't work. And so there needs to be a difficult confrontation with these presumptions of rights and this presumption of which rights trump other rights, because our collective wellness, our collective safety, based on the safety and dignity of each individual person, is now at risk. And this isn't something that's an urban problem. It's not a gender problem. It's not a sexual identity or sexual preference problem. It's a shared problem.
That's one thing that Dietrich's article did say, is that the gun problem is it's urban, it's suburban, it's rural, it's everything, it's everywhere.
844-967-2789, 844-967-2789, if you want to call and or text. Lynn Bauer is watching on the stream this morning, and Lynn says, so the case outcome will basically create a year-round open season on women, family values, my butt. Jack from Merrimack texting in, it's amazing to me, SCOTUS continues to ignore two parts of the Second Amendment, militia, which none of the individuals involved seem to be a part of, and more importantly, well-regulated, as it seems SCOTUS just throws out virtually all regulations.
It is a troubling, again, the preferencing of words when you read legal documents. Oh, these ones mean a lot. These other ones, well, we'll just ignore that. All of these are opportunities for judges and justices to reinvigorate or reassess some of the way that these analyses have been done in the past, and to at least acknowledge the modern problems in which their rulings operate. The thing that I hear most frequently from people when they complain about the justice system, the legal system, lawyers and judges, is they're so removed from reality. Well, each of these cases is an opportunity for the Supreme Court to re-engage with reality. My belief, Jane, is the same as yours. I don't think we can expect a good outcome here, given what has already come from this court in 2022 on this very issue.
Well, and Maggie,
but what I think we
go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, go ahead. What I think we're seeing is that regular folks are now responding to this and saying the things that callers and texters are saying, which is that doesn't make any real world sense. And when that starts to happen, it will have electoral consequences, one hopes.
Well, I just think I they're not going to be happy until we go back to the happy days of witch burnings. Back when times were good, man.
Oh, you're in trouble then. You are in trouble.
I'm serious. We are going backwards, especially when it comes to women and children. It's highly, highly disturbing.
Well, me, Jane, Catherine, all the nasty women, we're all going to be burned at the stake, Jane. That's what's up next.
Well, at least we'll be together in the afterlife. I'd rather hang out there with you. Maggie Dawn has been our guest. Thank you so very much for taking time out for us, Maggie. Really, really appreciate it. And stay with us when we come back. Dan Schaefer will be here so we can recombobulate. I understand there was a little news about the Brewers.
I swear to God, Jane,
yesterday.
This is not the time to joke.
We will kick that around coming up. You're listening to As Goes Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network.
From I-43 to I-41. This is the Talk of Green Bay.
1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW.
Don't change the station, but do watch out for deer, would ya? You know, they're running around all willy-nilly. It is the Krebscast with me, Charlie Behrens, on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know.
Former President Donald Trump leads President Biden in a new poll from the New York Times and Siena College. That survey has Trump leading in key battleground states like Wisconsin, as well as Georgia, Nevada, Arizona, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. That's despite facing dozens of criminal charges in four different cases. The survey polled about 600 registered voters in each of the six states. The presidential election is 1 year away. Postal workers in Milwaukee are demanding safer working conditions. The National Association of Letter Carriers rallied at Milwaukee's downtown post office Sunday. Eight people were arrested not long ago in a mail carrier robbery ring in the city. Another letter carrier was murdered on his route. Postal workers say they want the post office to work with the union to find solutions. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WGBW News, I'm Pete Schwabe. The Green Bay Police Department continues to search for the gunman in a fatal shooting. The GBPD responded to a weapons call around 5 p.m. Friday at an apartment complex on Western Avenue. The gunshot victim, a 30-year-old man, was taken to the hospital by witnesses but passed away. Police believe it is an isolated incident and there is no danger to the public. They have not released a description yet. Anyone who has information about the incident is being asked to contact the Green Bay Police Department. More information has been released about the two teenagers who escaped a house fire in Fond du Lac. The fire took place early Monday morning around 2:45 a.m. at the intersection of Military and Division Street. The two girls were a 14-year-old who woke up thanks to smoke alarms and then woke up her sister, a 12-year-old. The girls escaped with a fire escape ladder they bought at a garage sale recently. They made it to a neighbor's who called 911. The Fond du Lac Fire Department is investigating the incident. That's what you need to know. Pete Schwabe, 97.9 News.
When you're high, you feel different. You think different, you talk different, you draw different, you listen to music different, but you probably knew that. Problem is, you also drive different, and not in a good way. That's why driving high is illegal everywhere. So if you're high, just don't drive. Make a plan to get a sober ride. Because if you feel different, you drive different. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
The Brewers owner not happy with Craig Counsell. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Craig Counsell deciding to accept an offer to become the manager of the Chicago Cubs, paying Counsell $8 million a year, making him the highest paid manager in baseball history. Now, Brewers owner Mark Antanasio let reporters know he was disappointed, saying, quote, Craig has lost us and our community. The next time Craig Counsell will be in AmFam Field is next May when the Cubs come to town to play the Brewers. NBA, the Bucks picked up a win in Brooklyn, beating the Nets 129-125. Giannis Antetokounmpo leading Milwaukee with 36 points and 12 rebounds. Men's college basketball, the Badgers beating Arkansas State 105-76 at the Kohl Center. Badgers head coach Greg Gard.
I think defensively we got better at the start of the second half. It's not helpful when you got your more experienced guys on the bench in foul trouble, but I thought our guys off the bench gave us a great boost. We've thought that depth would help us, and here we are in game one, and it already showed.
That's Badgers head coach Greg Gard. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Weather brought to you by Bug Tussle. Bug Tussle, we're out there because you're out there.
Bug Tussle, we're out there.
Here's your updated forecast. Cloudy skies expected this afternoon with a chance for scattered showers. High at 42, northeasterly winds 8 to 15 miles an hour. Overcast tonight, scattered rain showers likely 38. Scattered rain showers again tomorrow, high at 44. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Ray Miller. Right now, it's 42.
Looking for a reliable, fast, and unlimited internet provider? Look no further than Bug Tussle. Whether you're streaming, gaming, working, or learning, Bug Tussle has you covered. Bug Tussle has continued to serve the rural communities of Wisconsin for over 20 years by providing the most reliable, high-speed internet and excellent local customer service. Call 877-227-0924 or visit bugtussle.com to get started. Bug Tussle, we're out there because you're out there.
From the home of the frozen tundra, Green Bay's choice for news talk, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW. UK.
As goes Wisconsin. Jane Matinier in for Kristen Bry. Greg Bach with me in studio. Kelvin, good choice on the tunes there on the board. And Dan Schaefer is joining us from the recombobulation area. Good morning, Dan. How you doing?
Good morning, Jane. Doing well. I was a little discombobulated, but I didn't hear my typical theme song. But once I saw Greg belting out the tunes over there for that one, it came together for me.
It's completely appropriate now that we know that Brewers manager Craig Counsell is going to the Cubs. Nobody saw that coming, right?
No. Kristen sent me a text message on my drive home yesterday. I told Pat Kreitlow this morning. This is real. She goes, oh my gosh, Counsell news. I'm like, all right. He went to New York. I don't text and drive. So I got home, sat on the couch, pulled up my phone, typed in Craig Counsell and said, Craig Counsell going to the Cubs. And I dropped my phone.
Did you really?
I'm so hurt. I'm so hurt.
Well, and we were just talking about this yesterday or right?
We've been talking about like almost every day for the past like week, just kind of bringing up. Yeah. He's talking to them. He's talking to those and whatever. He'll go to the Mets probably, or he'll stay here.
When we were talking about this yesterday, I said too, I think there would have been a lot of goodwill had he gone to the Mets. I don't think people would have had a problem with that, like they do with this decision to move down south.
Yeah. I mean, I have my thoughts. Dan, what about you?
It's not great, is it? I mean, it doesn't
feel good.
No. Like you were saying, I wouldn't have been totally surprised if he had left. If it had been, you know, the David Stearns connection in New York seemed like they were kind of laying the breadcrumbs for that for like a year.
Yeah.
Right. Knowing that Counsell's contract was up, knowing that he wasn't going to sign an extension before the season, knowing the Stearns connection, you know, the Mets had a bad season. So it just seemed like it was all lining up for him to go to New York. But I guess the pull of Wrigley and Chicago was just too much. There was a really interesting piece at Sports Illustrated from Tom Verducci talking about how this kind of brought together a couple different things that Counsell was looking for. And saying that he wanted to like reset the market for manager salaries.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, obviously getting $8 million a year from the Cubs, you know, if the Brewers would have given him $5.5 million a year, which was what the Journal Sentinel reported that they offered, that would have been, I think, the highest annual salary for managers in Major League Baseball. So the Cubs really like blew him away with that offer. But I think also like it said, you know, in the piece, it was talking about how, Counsell also wanted to stay in the Midwest because he has two kids who play college baseball at Michigan and Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
He has another kid who's still in high school. So I think there was, you know, and I think he's talked about Wrigley and Chicago and baseball in the past and in favorable terms. So I think it was just kind of all lined up. But man, what a, you know, feels like one of those betrayal almost type of moments. And I don't know if you saw the stories this morning, the Whitefish Bay Park, named after Counsell, was vandalized last night. His hometown of Whitefish Bay was vandalized.
Some salty language.
Yeah, that's right.
Don't do that, people.
Don't do that.
Don't do that.
But,
so,
you know,
it was a real
Whitefish bait and switch.
Ooh, see, he had to do the joke. I saw it. I saw it on the social media. He had to. No,
I was like, I tweeted it, and I was like, oh, I'm gonna annoy Greg with that tomorrow on Ask Us.
I think I clicked on it too. But the question I have for you is, did he even give Milwaukee a chance to counter the offer? Because according to Antanasio, he got the call from Counsell and said, I'm leaving. And his first words were, are you kidding me right now?
Yeah.
So that means that Milwaukee didn't even get the chance to counter. Now, I don't think they would have. I don't think they were going to offer him $6 or $7 million a year. I don't think they were in the interest of doing that. They're not in the interest of spending money. So it just, I don't know. Like, I'm hurt and betrayed by him. I'm very angry at Mark Antanasio because I think this is the culmination of years of trying to play cheap baseball with one of the best managers in the league. And this is what happens.
844-967-2789, 844-96-PARTY. If you want to call in and or text talking about Craig Council's decision to head to the Cubs after managing the Brewers. Good morning, everyone. John from the Falls checking in. Yesterday, I was feeling like Craig Council betrayed us, but upon further reflection, I no longer blame him for leaving. I think it's ironic and disgusting that we have an owner who says that Craig turned his back on our team and our community when the owner himself has decided to use the profits made off the backs of Brewers fans to invest in soccer teams and pad his own bank account rather than paying for talent to make the team better. It takes a lot of nerve to ask for upgrades to a stadium when the best team you're willing to build is filled with AA hitters and Major League Baseball has-beens. It makes me sad to say that until we have a new owner, the Brewers are dead to me. I won't buy any of their merch, tickets for any games, pay for TV access to watch them, or support them in any way. It also seems like he's trying to ram the stadium renovation through as quickly as possible while he dumps salary everywhere he can.
Was this a text or an email?
John, this is our friend John from the Falls.
Is this a recombobulation area column?
Whoa.
You know?
I mean, there's a certain amount of truth to that. Mark Attanasio got on the podium yesterday and was like, you know, I think he said something effective. He lost us and lost our community. Dude, you don't live here. Craig Council lived here. He had investments in this area. He loved this area. Mark Attanasio doesn't get to play the victim now. Like, oh, he doesn't believe in the community. Dude, you don't. You live in Los Angeles and Brooklyn. That's where you live. You don't really live here. You come here every once in a while. You show your face. I got no love and no, like, sympathy for that man.
And I think that's where the unhappiness of the fans is going to be directed. I think it's going to be all directed at Mark Attanasio.
I think it's so interesting. You mentioned that comment from Attanasio about losing the community. The reporting from Kurt Hogg at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, the sentence before that in Attanasio's comments, he mentions the stadium financing plan. To put those right next to each other, it's really something to see Attanasio mention the stadium financing plan alongside the council comments and alongside losing the community. That is... I don't know. I don't even know what to make of it.
he's a millionaire tone deaf dude who's just like whatever. Like, I mean, John from the Falls is not wrong. This guy has no. It's about what, like, all my toys. He doesn't care about his toys. He just wants to get his toys.
844-967-2789 844-96-PARTY. Rico from Rock County is joining us. Good morning, Rico.
Hey, how are you guys doing today?
We're good, thank you. What do you think about Mr. Council heading south?
This whole thing to me, guys, I just want to say quickly, it's so reminiscent of the Brett Favre thing. But I do want to say, you know, we know Favre went and ghosted that season over there in the Jets and then ended up playing for the Vikings, and he even wanted to go there. And I thought to myself, but you know what? I'm going to give Brett a little credit here. There is no way did he ever talk about, I don't think he would have even entertained going to the Chicago Bears.
No, no, he wanted to be a Viking. That's true. You're very right. He wanted to be a Viking. The Jets were a stepping stone for him.
So do you feel...
imagine him of wanting to go into the Bears?
No.
Do you feel like Craig Council betrayed the fans?
I don't know if I want to call it betrayal. Sports is such a money game, and we all knew he was leaving. That's a little kick in the pants. Wisconsin people are not going to let you forget that. We might have forgave Brett, but it took a while. That's all I'm going to say.
Thank you so much, Rico. Really appreciate it. Have a great day. 844-967-2789, 844-96-PARTY. If you want to call and or text on Craig Council's decision to go to the Chicago Cubs, and also Mark Attanasio's decision to let him go. Dan, how do you think this is going to affect the franchise going forward?
It's so interesting that this is happening right in the middle of the stadium deal negotiations, right? Like, I don't think this is, you know, necessarily going to impact the bigger picture. We're talking about, you know, a 27-year lease for the Brewers. I don't think Craig Council would be around for coaching the Brewers in 2050. So there's bigger forces at play here than that. I do think it's the PR of it It certainly isn't great. Like when you could, you're asking for more than $500 million in public funding from state and local taxpayers, and you get outbid by the Cubs by $2.5 million a year. That doesn't seem great. That doesn't seem great. I think it might, give legislators pause and say, if they were on the fence and say, hold on, what's going on here? This franchise, we're about to shell out $400 million state funding, $60 million, county funding, $60 million, city funding for this deal. Is that really what we want to be doing right now? But I don't know if it's really going to play into those calculations as much as just maybe giving people some pause.
We have Jeff on the line from Milwaukee. Jeff, thanks for listening. What do you want to say about Craig Council's decision to head to the Cubs?
Well, good morning, everybody. So I would personally put 75% of the blame on Mark Attanasio. I mean, he has cheaped out. We've all talked about that. But I'm going to talk about one aspect that I haven't seen reported anywhere, and it's about Craig Council's ethics on this decision, because he altruistically pointed out that, through his agent, we're going to try to reset the market on managerial salaries. I'm trying to do this for my fraternity of managers, that kind of thing. And he literally took a dump on the Cubs manager, David Ross, who was employed by the Cubs as their current manager. And he had to have negotiated and settled on a salary and his contract while David Ross was still their manager. I mean, if you think about the sequence of events, right? And then once Council was signed, then the Cubs called David Ross, wherever he is in the offseason, and say, oh, by the way, you're no longer employed with us. So there's a little bit of a Craig Council ethical dilemma as I look at it.
That's a really interesting point, Jeff. It is. I mean, as you said, obviously there were negotiations going on that no one knew about. And the other thing I was hearing on some of the sports talkers, it's pretty remarkable that this never leaked. There was no hint of this at all.
I mean, he was just his free agency just started like last week. He was granted permission to talk to Cleveland and New York because he was still under contract, but his free agency came up last week. So after that, I mean, who knows? I mean, for all we know, the Ricketts may have just called him up on 2 days ago and said, hey, there you go.
Well, that was in the Sports Illustrated piece that I referenced. The Sports Illustrated reported that Council became a free agent on November 1st, the day after his contract expired, and the Cubs called on November 1st, saying their interest was to bring him in, calling him one or two best managers in the game.
Yeah. I mean, his ethics, I don't know. It's the game. If every manager had to worry about another manager's job, then they would never. This would be like the old days of the reserve clause where they would have to let go by the owners. It's like, I get what the caller is saying, but I also don't challenge his ethics. It's just, this is business. It's about money. These guys cycle around. He'll be fine. They'll make their money. They'll coach somewhere else and maybe it'll be a better fit.
Well, and I think I can compare this to radio because on air spots, there are only so many. Just like general managers for baseball teams, there are only so many. And I have lost my job and been replaced by a friend that I knew.
Mm-hmm.
It's not fun and it doesn't feel good, but it happens. All right, when we come back, it is 1 year away from today. We will be going to the polls.
Oh.
We're going to talk elections. Stay with us. You're listening to As Goes Wisconsin. Dan Schaefer is here. Greg Buck and Kelvin is on the board. You can always check in too at 844-967-2789. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is the talk of Green Bay, WGBW.
Small businesses represent the lifeblood of every community. In Wisconsin, small businesses represent 99.4% of all businesses. Their importance to our economy, especially our rural livelihood, cannot be overstated. Entrepreneurs must be innovative and have a growth mindset in order to keep pace. Business owners and employees of small businesses can attend a free presentation by small business expert Fred Hochberg. Hochberg is former head of the Small Business Administration, the Export-Import Bank of the United States, and the Lillian Vernon Corporation. His presentation, Small Business Growth Strategies in Rural Communities, takes place on Wednesday, November 8th at the UW Green Bay Marinette Campus. Hochberg will share ideas for how rural businesses can thrive in today's marketplace. Funding for the presentation comes from the Tommy G. Thompson Center for Public Leadership. For more information on Fred Hochberg's November 8th presentation, Small Business Growth Strategies in Rural Communities, and to register for this free event, visit thompsoncenter.wisc.edu. That's thompsoncenter.wisc.edu.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW.
I'm discombobulated.
Good morning. Welcome to As Goes Wisconsin, 10 minutes before 11 o'clock. Jane Matinere in for Kristen Bry, Greg Bach with me in studio, Calvin on the board, and Dan Schaefer joining us as we recombobulate every Tuesday from 10:30 to 11. Just a reminder, tomorrow at 10:30, Kristen Bry will be joining us, and hopefully we'll get a little look at Frankie Lou and see how she's doing.
I think this will be the third week we haven't seen her.
The baby, I know.
And with every time you say it, you're like, maybe this time we will see the baby.
It's got to work. It's got to work for mom.
Show me the baby.
Show me the baby.
Show me the baby.
I pester her a couple of times a week to send me pictures. So
I never pester her because that's your job.
And I'm doing a good job.
You're doing
it.
A great job.
Anyway, coming up in the next hour at 11:06, it's going to be very exciting. And I'm really genuinely excited
me
about
too.
This.
I really am.
Dr. Stephen Cole from Marquette University is going to join us to talk about the GDP, the gross domestic product, and what that means and why it's important and why we should care. And when I emailed him, I said, I need you to explain it to me like I'm a fifth grader. So hopefully he's going to break it down nice and digestibly.
With crayons.
With crayons and picture books.
Yeah.
Possibly. All right. 1 week, 1 week, 1 year from today, we will be going to the polls and casting ballots. How are you feeling about things, Dan Schaefer?
Feeling pretty good.
Are you?
You know, I mean, we're about to enter the pressure cooker of Wisconsin being one of the five or six states that is going to decide the presidential election. High stakes, of course. But I think, you know, the Democrats in Wisconsin are, you know, did kind of a 1 year out thing over the weekend where they started their canvassing, and Ben Wickler was crisscrossing the state, and they had different events all over to start that ground game, start knocking on doors, start figuring things out. So I think that's, you know, a really important part of the process that's going to unfold. But yeah, I think just, you know, we also saw some polling over the weekend with Joe Biden, maybe not quite where you'd want him to be in some of these key swing states. But also at the same time, it's like normally at this part of the cycle, we're talking about the primary. We're not talking about the general election yet. I think where those polls putting Trump against Biden are skipping over a few steps that might be happening over these next couple months, because is it a foregone conclusion that Trump is going to be the nominee, is going to be the person giving that nomination speech at the RNC in Milwaukee next July?
I'm watching Nikki Haley. I just find it interesting because Nikki is doing, what, isn't she tied with DeSantis now? Or even coming in higher than DeSantis?
Essentially about the same. I think she's ahead of him in New Hampshire, but I think in the national polls that she's more or less pulled even. She's really been the only candidate with any positive momentum in that GOP primary race. The problem with that is that positive momentum has brought her from about, like, I don't know, like 5% to 13% or something like that. It's not exactly like she's, you know, blowing the doors off and making this stratospheric rise. She's, you know, just more or less doing better than Ron DeSantis, who has run one of the worst presidential campaigns I have ever seen. He was at like 30% before he announced, and it was only like 10% behind Trump. He was heralded as this candidate who was going to be, you know, the next evolution of the not Trump, you know, but still very Trumpy part of the Republican Party. And he has just absolutely fallen flat. And he's just done run such a horrible campaign. You know, about a month ago, he said he was going all in on Iowa. And about a couple weeks later, the Des Moines Register's gold standard Iowa poll had him losing ground in Iowa. So yeah. It's just like every time, you know, he's just gone down, down, down throughout this primary. So it just seems like it's just setting up for Trump to run away with it. And I think that's why we're seeing some of the polling now with the head to head. It's just like the general election hasn't started yet, but they're acting like it is because there's been so little interest on in the Republican primary, because mainly I think because DeSantis has done so horribly, but also because of the rest of the candidates outside of Nikki Haley haven't really done anything either.
Honestly, if I'm Ben Wickler, I'm kind of happy about the polls that came out, because it means you can push more for dollars, get people to work harder. If Biden's ahead by 10 points, then people are like, oh, it's a foregone conclusion, I'll stay home, or I'll do this. If he's losing in the polls, that means people are going to get off their tuchuses and really work harder and get people out there voting. But the question, and this is really speculative because it has to do with Wisconsin and Scott Walker running for president in 2012. Do you think that this, spectacular flameout on Ron DeSantis will hurt his future as governor of Florida?
I'm wondering about that too, because there's lots of stuff going on in Florida there are many things that are not good.
Yeah. I mean, even being primaried by a Republican who's just like, I'm not this dude.
You have to wonder, I feel like his whole reelection that he was running, and he won a resounding reelection victory in Florida running against a bad candidate in Charlie Crist. But yeah. I think it certainly warps his future as a player on the national stage, because he had a absolutely golden opportunity to take the reins of the Republican primary. And he's just run one of the worst campaigns I've ever seen.
And it says a lot about the Republican Party that they didn't, as a group, come together and say, we need to shake off the dust of Cheetos, and we need to anoint a new king. And the fact that they didn't do it, and in fact went essentially back to their ex and said, no, he's the guy. It speaks a lot about the party. It speaks a lot about DeSantis. It's, once again, we're in a presidential election where the GOP just cannot stop shooting themselves in the feet.
Well, and I have to say, too, I am amazed for a political candidate who has so little charisma and is so socially awkward. I have never seen anything like Ron DeSantis trying to act like a normal human being. It was unbelievable. It was.
That smile at the debate.
He just was so uncomfortable. And so I'm amazed that he has achieved the success that he has.
Yeah. I think it's more likely that he drops out before Iowa than he wins Iowa.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting.
It says a lot when you're the most charming man in Florida.
Dan Schaefer, it's always a pleasure having you here. Thank you so much for joining us. We will talk to you again soon. Stay with us when we come back. Dr. Stephen Cole from Marquette University is going to be with us. You're listening to As Goes Wisconsin. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Wheels up and we'll be rocking. Getting out of frozen Wisconsin. I need you to recombobulate me. I want you to recombobulate me. I need you to recombobulate me. Won't somebody recombobulate me?
Mino and the Mayor in the morning. And the talk of Green Bay all day long. 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW. This is your hometown radio, refreshed. Keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network. The Talk of Green Bay, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios.
Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
Don't let biased algorithms or degree screens or exclusive professional networks, or stereotypes. Don't let anything keep you from discovering the half of the workforce who are stars. Workers skill through alternative routes rather than a bachelor's degree. It's time to tear the paper ceiling and see the stars beyond it. Find out how you can make stars part of your talent strategy at tearthepaperceiling.org. Brought to you by Opportunity at Work and the Ad Council.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay.
WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CV Green Bay.
And always streaming.